Welcome back in. Final hour of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Elijah Campbell here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We're going to have Adam Vingan from The Athletic drop by at 9:30. We'll look ahead to a massive game for the Nashville Predators with him tonight against the Columbus Blue Jackets. That coming up your way later this hour at 9:30. Also later getting into an interesting statement released yesterday by the New York Rangers regarding Tom Wilson, and one of the strongest statements we've ever seen from a professional sports franchise in general. We'll get to that coming up at 9:45. As always, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Joe, I take a look at the Titans and their wide receiver room right now, and right now you've got A.J. Brown, you bring in Josh Reynolds this offseason, you've just drafted Des Fitzpatrick as well. Obviously, Cam Batson is there. Nick Westbrook-Ikhina is there as well, which we all know. Big fans of Nick Westbrook-Ikhina here on the show, and the Titans are as well.
Yeah.
Titans fans have loved it.
Maybe a Pro Bowler this year.
Could be. We'll see what happens on that front. As you look at the receiving room with the additions they've made, also with the subtractions of Corey Davis gone, Adam Humphrey's gone as well, no more Khalif Raymond, how do you view the wide receiver room right now for the Titans? Do you feel better about it heading into this season? Do you think it could end up being better than the room they had last year? How would you go about answering that?
Well, I wouldn't rule it out. I wouldn't say it is right now. But the important thing, the important point to always make when you talk about the receiver room is what actually was it last year? For most of the year, it was A.J. Brown and Corey Davis. And
that's pretty much it.
And, you know, other dudes. I mean, Adam Humphries didn't play much. I think those three were together. I mean, it wasn't much. I don't.
Maybe like two games?
Maybe. You know, I was going to say maybe three or four. So could it be better? Yeah, I think Josh Reynolds is a good player. And Des Fitzpatrick is probably the biggest answer to this question. They move up to get him. They like him a lot in the fourth. Productive guy. You know, good size, pretty good speed. I mean, you're talking about 19-1 a catch last year for Louisville. You know, I think he could come in and be a good player. They need that. And if that's the case, then I think that's a pretty good trio that you could say maybe by the end of the year is better. A big question here also is, what did you think of what Corey Davis did last year? I can tell you that the Titans liked Corey Davis, respected him, and he was a good blocker, and he was a good player, but felt that, you know, Corey Davis took advantage, as a lot of receivers could, of how teams defended the Titans. And I have no reason to dispute that. I don't think Corey Davis did anything extravagant or spectacular last year. He produced in a situation where you better produce in this league. So I'm not saying anyone plugs in there and just has the same numbers. He was good. But I think that that's a pretty attractive place to be on an offense that has Derrick Henry and A.J. Brown. And I think Josh Reynolds can come in and do pretty well.
He's the guy to me that's really interesting in all this because, I mean, obviously, I mean, there's quite the receiver room in L.A. I mean, when you start talking about where Josh Reynolds fit in, and the role that he played. I mean, last year, 81 targets, 52 receptions, 618 yards, two touchdowns. I think the thing that you like most about Josh Reynolds, other than the ability that he has, is the availability that he's displayed. I mean, he's played in all 16 games every year he's been in the league. Now, it's the NFL. Things can happen. That can change in a hurry. But I think you feel pretty good about Josh Reynolds being available to you because right now, I look at this Titans wide receiver room, and the first thing that comes to mind is they cannot afford an injury to any one of those top two guys. Like, you can't have an injury right now with Josh Reynolds, and you certainly can't have an injury with A.J. Brown. I mean, that goes without saying at this point, but there's not much depth there. I mean, there's nothing that you really feel great about behind those two. You can't have injuries, and what you feel good about is, you know, A.J. Brown, I think, showed a lot of toughness last year, obviously. His knee was bothering him all year. His ankle at the end of the year was bothering him as well, and he was able to find a way to play through it and still be productive. What could he look like completely healthy? Like, how productive can he be if he's completely healthy this year? And Josh Reynolds, as I said, he's played in every game so far and has been available for every game in his career. So you feel great about that. You just cross your fingers. Like, if something happens to one of those two guys, this room gets very thin in a hurry.
Right. Now, in all seriousness, on Westbrook Akina, like, they like him.
They do.
I think he's in the mix there as a guy who can contribute some. I like Cam Batson. I mean, I think Cam Batson, when he's healthy, is a guy, can be, you know, a gadget guy here and there, can make plays for you. He could be that sort of, you know, dedicated or, you know, prototypical, like, slot guy. I mean, he's small. But, he's not bad. I mean, Fitzpatrick is important. You know, he's got to be able to come in, and more rookies come into this league from these college offenses and contribute and don't have to watch for 8 weeks before they figure it out. And then Racy McMath is interesting. Certainly the measurables are there. There's some explanation for his lack of production and who was playing ahead of him most of his career at LSU. I think he's got a great chance to make the team because of if he's as good as they say he is as a gunner. But then could he jump in there? And could he be like a Khalif Raymond kind of player where, you know, a handful of times a game they try to scheme something up and get him vertical? I mean, they still – any kind of speed element to stretch a defense that way would really be good for this offense.
Well, and, you know, I think that was a big question, too, about A.J. Brown coming into last year was, all right, he's obviously great after the catch. Can he win some 50-50 balls? Can he go down the field and be kind of a vertical threat? And I think he showed last year that, yeah, he can. I mean, he can go down the field and be a vertical threat. So, I mean, obviously you feel great about A.J. Brown heading into this year. Can Josh Reynolds do any of that? Like, can he add to the vertical passing game? Like, that's what he did at Texas A&M. It's not really been the case for him in the NFL. Is that a system thing? Is that a Jared Goff thing? What is that with Josh Reynolds? I'm interested to see what he can do in terms of the vertical passing game here in Nashville.
Yeah. I mean, you don't think of him that way. I mean, basically, you know, you think of Josh Reynolds as a possession-ish third guy for them, but you know, he does have speed. I mean, I think what's his 40 time? I know 40 time is like the most, you know, overrated, you know, he's 4.5 at the combine, so it's not like he's a burner.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, A.J. Brown doesn't have a great 40 either.
Yeah.
And he gets
– Nobody's catching up to A.J. Brown.
He runs past people. We just haven't seen Reynolds – I mean, I haven't seen him do a lot of that. But, sure, I mean, I think if you're him, I mean, I think it's a smart move for one thing. I mean, Josh Reynolds, this is a good move. You could potentially be the number two, and it's a good place to be the number two receiver. Now, granted, it may not be an offense that wings it around 42 times a game, but you're going to have opportunities. And I think, you know, he could elevate himself in this league. And the Titans need that to be the case. They need him to be really good.
We had David Beauclair from SI.com on with us earlier in the show and did talk about, you know, wondering whether or not the Titans were leaving open the possibility of trading for Julio Jones. Now, I look at the math on that, and I just can't see a way that that's going to work without just totally – you know, eviscerating the lineup that you have that's already been eviscerated to some degree. But maybe I'm wrong. Like, maybe you can find a way to make this work if you're the Titans. And Beauclair talked about the relationship that's obviously there between the Titans and Arthur Smith now there with Atlanta. Do you think there's any chance the Titans trade for Julio Jones?
No.
Not even a little.
I'll put whatever the smallest amount percent chance I can put on it. 1.1? I mean, you can never say never.
Sure.
But no, I don't think that's a thing. I don't think it'll be a thing. Doesn't make sense. Doesn't make sense financially.
So are you comfortable with Josh Reynolds being the number two?
Well, if you're asking me who would I rather have as my number two?
But like, if it's not going to be Julio Jones, like, who's going to be the number two at this point? Like, who are you bringing in that's better than Josh Reynolds? Some people would say Golden Tate.
No.
I don't think so.
No. Golden Tate's, he's seen his best days.
Yes.
No. I don't know. There may be someone out there who may be better than Josh Reynolds, but no, I mean, no one jumps off the page. And you know, Julio, it's just, the cost is just ridiculous. I mean, I just don't know how you make that work. Yes, I mean, I know someone will immediately Titans Facebook, just restructure some deals. All you got to do is restructure. Okay. Well, if that was that easy, then why'd they cut half their team in the offseason?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe they cut half their team in the offseason.
To bring in Julio.
So they're going to bring in Julio all along. Maybe Julio is this offseason's Jadeveon Clowney. I don't buy it.
That's a scary thought.
Yeah, well, that's true. You don't want – yeah, in a lot of ways, you don't want that to be the case. But, no, I don't think that's it. I don't think that's happening. I'll be really interested to see if anything heats up with Julio and the Falcons.
Yeah, it's going to be – I mean, it kind of feels like it's going to happen, but we'll see what happens on that front. I don't think the Titans are going to be there, but – you know, Peter King was thrown out. Maybe they've shown some interest. It's one thing to show some interest and able to, like, actually execute and make this thing happen. It's quite another.
It'd be stupid not to call and it say, yeah, can you keep 80% of that cap hit?
We're all about it here, buddy. Bring him in. This Friday, May the 7th, has been declared Nashville Predators Pride Day throughout Tennessee. We invite you to cheer on the team by wearing gold throughout the day. The Preds will highlight their amazing fans sporting their favorite Preds gear. Take a pic and post on your social media page, and be sure to tag the Preds at PredsNHL. Show your support for the Preds and wear gold this Friday. When we come back, we'll continue the discussion on the Titans. How do you feel about the wide receiver room? Are you confident in this group heading into the season, or would you like to see more added to the wide receiver room? We'll discuss that. Also get into some interesting comments by Caleb Farley as well. All that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Elijah Campbell here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Talking Titans, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. The Titans and their wide receiver room, what do you think of it? Is it better heading into this year? Is it worse? How concerned are you about the wide receiver depth? And a lot of this, Joe, is going to come down to what does Des Fitzpatrick look like? Like, how ready is he to come in and be a contributor at the NFL level? Like, I view this room right now, based on what the Titans did to go get Des Fitzpatrick, I view him as one of their top three guy. Like, I would go A.J. Brown, obviously, number one. Josh Reynolds, number two, and Des Fitzpatrick at number three. But there's a chance, you know, being a rookie, it doesn't play out that way, and he's not ready to be the number three. If he's not ready, like, who's the number three on this team?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly won't start that way in camp, certainly. The Titans, I'm sure, would love to see it end up that way.
Sure.
At this point, I think Westbrook and Keenum. That's my guess.
There are some Titans fans there.
Yep.
Probably about to drive off the road right now.
That's my guess as far as lining up. Now, again, I think they went and they got Fitzpatrick, and the idea would be that he has a great camp, and Westbrook Akina is a little bit more down the depth chart. But I think that would be – it's him or Batson starting out.
Yeah.
When you start in 11, three receivers, you know, it's one of those two. So neither of them is going to excite Titans fans. I get it. It's not exciting. But Fitzpatrick is, I mean, of the people in camp, obviously, Caleb Farley, huge, huge story. You know, Bud Dupree, huge, huge story. Those are health-wise. I think Christian Fulton, huge deal, because no matter what combination you want to go through, he's got to be good this year and play a lot. But I think Des Fitzpatrick is another one of those short list of, like, individual storylines that will top training camp, because – you went and, you know, by the analysts' assessment, you reached for him. You went higher than people had him graded. You traded two picks to go get him. Now, it's not like you drafted him super high, but this is a guy you targeted, went and got, and didn't draft any receivers early when you could have. And so the idea is, yeah, he's coming in and he's going to make a difference.
Also interesting as a part of this discussion, number one, like, is Anthony Firkser going to be your glorified slot guy? Like, right now, he's the number one tight end on this team. So how do you use him in the passing game? Like, you need somebody to be a threat over the middle. Like, I would imagine they're going to move A.J. Brown around a lot this year. I mean, he's obviously, he can line up on the outside. I think you can put A.J. Brown pretty much anywhere you want to put A.J. Brown, and he's going to find a way to get open. So you feel great about that. But I still think this offense is missing, like, that specific, dedicated slot guy, which is why, you know, the trade back with Green Bay, the more I think about it, is interesting to me. Because if you hold on at 85, I mean, Amari Rodgers is right there for you. And you've got a chance to select your slot guy. And he's absolutely, unquestionably the slot guy at that point with Amari Rodgers coming in there. I think you feel pretty good about that if you're a Titans fan. And obviously that's not the route they went. And then you select a linebacker in the third round and end up with Dez Fitzpatrick. The more I think about that decision, the more it's kind of very weird to me that Amari Rodgers was sitting right there and the Titans didn't go that route.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, maybe they just didn't like him that much.
Maybe
I mean,
not.
I mean, Amari Rodgers was – he was one of those guys. There's at least a difference of opinion with him a little bit more than like an Elijah Moore,
yep,
who – you know, he was one of the darlings of one of those risers kind of across the board. People thought a lot of him going into the draft. I like Amari Rodgers. I think he's a really good player. And I think, like you said, he's a guy who would have come in here as the slot guy. Maybe. Now, look, you're going to answer the question probably based on what you did, right? So if they drafted someone who fits in the slot, it's like, yeah, I wanted a slot. If you don't, yeah, who cares?
We don't care.
But Vrabel really did blow that off. Like, we can move guys around. And I mean, like you said, look, I think A.J. Brown will be in the slot a fair amount this year because I mean, you're trying to get matchups. You're moving people around.
I mean, Davante Adams in Green Bay, he will play literally everywhere. I think, I mean, I don't know if A.J. Brown's quite to that level yet, but you can pretty much play A.J. Brown anywhere at this point.
Right. And he's going to take another step in terms of understanding and everything. I mean, I'd be willing to bet that. I think he's a Byard-like film guy. So. I don't know that it was necessary. I do like the slot guy. I like the really good slot guy like a Humphreys because in a pinch, you move the chains with those guys. And, again, two fourth down conversions in that AFC Championship game to Humphreys because it was just like, you know what, when it comes down to it, he can't be pressed and he is going to get you 5 yards right here. I like that. It's good to have, but it's not – it's not completely shocking that they went away from that and that they have a bigger room overall. I think that was also worth doing after last year.
Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Fred from Ashland City texting in. I've seen a lot of people down on Josh Reynolds. Maybe I'm missing something, but I thought he's a pretty good receiver. Why do so many people act like he's going to suck?
I don't know, man.
I don't know that – I mean – I don't know that I would say that people are down on Josh Reynolds. I would say people are down on Josh Reynolds and the idea of him being the number two. Like, I'll admit, like, I have concerns about – like, I don't know if Josh Reynolds is a number two wide receiver in the NFL. Maybe he is. Like, maybe this is the opportunity that he's been looking for, and he can come in specifically with this offense, with the threat of Derrick Henry, with the threat of A.J. Brown, and he just slots in perfectly at number two wide receiver for the Titans. But I think in a perfect world – Josh Reynolds is probably your number three on this roster. I mean, when we were talking about, you know, the Titans selecting a wide receiver early in the draft, that's what we said. Like, who's going to be the number two wide receiver? And Josh Reynolds could slide into number three. Like, I don't feel any differently now. I still think Josh Reynolds should be probably your number three wide receiver on this team.
And right now, I feel like he's clearly your two.
Unquestionably, your two.
Yeah. So, from that perspective, yeah. It's disappointing after the draft that there isn't someone more obvious, but Dez Fitzpatrick.
I mean, maybe he comes in and just lights it up immediately.
Could be.
I mean, A.J. Brown, pretty instant impact in this league.
The receiver draft.
He's not A.J. Brown. I understand that.
No, but his selection was another, you know, example for me. Like, I hadn't thought about him one time.
Yeah.
And I was like, gosh, that's right. He was really good. Like, I watched him for 4 years in college. He's good.
I mean, we heard about how deep the wide receiver draft was this year, and even just watching it play out in real time, I'm like, man, yeah, this is pretty deep.
Yeah.
You're still getting big-name guys in, like, the fourth and fifth round at wide receiver.
And, again, he was supposed to be a sixth or seventh round pick. So, I don't – this is going to be – this is Titans evaluation versus analyst evaluation. And don't tell me that, you know, just always trust the team because sometimes the team – is wrong, and the analysts are more right than the team. That happens. It happens more than you'd want to believe for some people. So we'll see. The same thing with Monty Rice. You know, he was supposed to be a day three guy. They take him at 92. So those evaluations from them clearly different than the popular, you know. And I, of course, I go a lot with Dan Brugler because I went to his thing like 27 times a day in the last month.
You did.
So, I mean, it's a heck of a resource. Doesn't mean it's always right. You can go back and read stuff Brugler wrote last year that probably looks stupid now. I mean, everybody's going to be wrong on some guys.
Sure.
And a lot of guys.
102.5 The Game and T-Mobile have partnered up to give you a chance to experience a Nashville SC game this season. Tune in every Monday to Darren Donick and Chase for the keyword to text in to win. Good luck from 102.5 The Game, T-Mobile, and Nashville SC. When we come back, we'll get back into the Nashville Predators. Adam Vingan from The Athletic will join us. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well. Right now talking Nashville Predators. And to help us do that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our good friend Adam Vingan from The Athletic, who is always vibing. Adam, what's going on, brother? How are we doing?
Robbie, how does it feel to have your face on your co-host torso right now?
It's very good. It feels great. I'm glad that Rex Road has decided to sport his We're Vibing Robbie t-shirt today that you can pick up at Journey Risk True. And he looks pretty good in it, I'll be honest with you.
I'm combing the beard right now.
Yeah. It feels, you should get you one, Adam.
Where's yours?
I don't have one yet.
All right, we can fix this.
Yet, that's a key
yet
word.
Yet is the key word in that discussion, that's for sure. Adam, the Predators taking on Columbus tonight with an opportunity, if things go well, to clinch a playoff berth tonight. How amazing is it that we're saying that sentence here today on this show?
It is quite amazing, and I think the official clinching scenario, the NHL has not posted it yet, but I believe a Predators win of any kind against the Blue Jackets and a regulation loss by the Stars to the Lightning will clinch the Predators' seventh consecutive playoff appearance. The only two teams that either are tied or have more playoff appearances in a row are the Washington Capitals, who also have seven, and the Pittsburgh Penguins, who I think are at 14 or 15 at this point. But considering where they were, where they are, and where they could be, you know, I looked it up last night because I was curious. So if the Predators win tonight, I think that will make them 19-6-1 in their past 26 games, which is a 123-point pace over the course of an 82-game season.
Not bad.
And two things can be true at once. I think you can, as a fan, celebrate this sort of accomplishment, this sort of turnaround. But then I think the cynical among us, including myself, as per usual, will look at it as, well, it took a 123-point pace over the second half of the season to get you into fourth place. So depending on which side of the fence you sit, I mean, it could be a reason to celebrate. It could also, once again, be a reason to be skeptical or cynical of this team's chances and overall trajectory.
Adam's wet blanket of negativity once again draped over the proceedings.
I'd like to think it's realism, not negativity.
That's right.
No, it is realism, but I think you hit the point there. You know, it's two things true, and if you're a Predators fan, I would hope that you've been enjoying this, you know? I mean, I think it's been an enjoyable run. And I think the question that we all have, Adam, and we're not going to have a great feel for it until probably it's all over here and whatever happens in the postseason, but, you know, how sustainable is this? 123-point pace isn't, right? But how sustainable is it in terms of if this team just could have been decent early, you know, it could be in a different spot right now. Can it be this team for a whole season? But, I mean, the biggest thing there is Soros, right? I mean, Where are you right now on him? We had a good comment from our friend Jeremy K. Gover about Askarov. You know, if Soros does emerge, he becomes a trade asset. But either way, you have him as the next goalie up. The goalie situation as you see it right now.
It is quite interesting because Predators do have a pretty good goaltending pipeline. They have UC Soros. They have Connor Ingram. who has since returned. Of course, if you recall, he entered I don't remember the exact name of it. It has changed, but what we used to be known as the substance abuse and behavioral, I can't remember exactly what it's called, but he entered that program in January and has since returned and has played a couple of games for the Chicago Wolves. And then you have Yaroslav Askarov, the first round pick from this past draft. And it's funny because we talked about at the beginning of the season that UC Soros really only needed to be the goalie of the immediate future, that he just needed to be a bridge from Pekka to, you know, presumably Askarov, which is probably like a 2 to 3, maybe 4 year bridge, depending on how long it takes Askarov to get to the NHL. But when you look at how well UC Soros has been playing, when you combine that with how well he played at the end of last season too, they certainly have something in him. I personally believe and have believed that the height issue, if you would like to call it that, regarding UC Soros has been incredibly overblown. I think, sub-6-foot goaltenders, while they are outliers, can still be, effective in the NHL. Just look at Anton Hudobin last year and at various points this year. So, I wrote the other day that I think UC Soros should be in the Hart Trophy conversation. What does that mean exactly? I think he's probably worthy of some fourth and fifth place votes, maybe a third place vote here and there. I mean, Connor McDavid has already won the award, and if all 100 members of the voting block do not select Connor McDavid to win the Hart Trophy, something is incredibly wrong. But I still think that UC Soros deserves that consideration. I mean, without him, this season would have been over 2 months ago. I mean, it's plain and simple.
Adam Vingan from The Athletic on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com.
Real quick, I can tell you guys right now, I'm going to have a problem with Askarov Askarov. So thank you for correcting me. So I'll figure it out, though. The Skiatika is acting up
Skiatika, today. Skiatika, another case of the Skiatika here on the program. Adam, what do you think of this Tom Wilson situation going on right now in the NHL? Obviously, that took Twitter by storm yesterday. Tom Wilson basically body slamming Artemi Panarin to the ice the other night. Panarin going to be out the rest of this week. Will miss the rest of the season for the Rangers. Wilson handed a $5,000 fine by the NHL Department of Player Safety yesterday. And the New York Rangers coming out with potentially the strongest statement I've ever seen from a professional sports organization, basically calling for George Parros, the director of NHL Player Safety, to be fired in that statement. What do you think of all this? What do you think of Tom Wilson as a player and his place in this league? And what did you think of that response by the New York Rangers?
Well, first of all, the New York Rangers are going to be fined more for that statement than Tom Wilson was for his act against Pavel Buchnevich, which, by the way, is what he was fined for. He was not fined for the Artemi Panarin scuffle, if I recall correctly, based on the press release from the NHL. But I mean, when that statement came out, it was one of those instances where I had to make sure that it was not like a fake Rangers Twitter account. but thinking about, I'm looking at it right now, a horrifying act of violence. I especially appreciated the use of dereliction of duty as it relates to George Parros, the former NHL player and now head of Department of Player Safety. Look, I have an interesting perspective on Tom Wilson because I covered Tom at the beginning of his career. I was still in Washington when Tom debuted in the NHL. And, at the time, early on in his career, he was sort of thrust into that enforcing type role. But over the years, the thing that always confuses me about the way that Tom goes about his business on the ice is that he's a far better player than that. You think of someone like Brad Marchand, for example. I mean, Brad Marchand is a pest. I mean, he literally licked Ryan Callahan a few years ago, for God's sake.
He did.
But he's an effective player. I mean, he can score goals. He can make an impact in a top six. And so can Tom Wilson. I mean, Tom Wilson does not have to resort to these tactics, to put it lightly. It is part of his game, but, he's much more skilled than that. So, you know, you hope that, you know, someone can get through to him. You know, Peter Laviolette called it, I think he just said, that's what happens in a scrum. You know, I'm not sure exactly how often that really just happens in a scrum. But, you know, of course, Peter is just defending his player just as he would when he was here. But, yeah, I have a hard time. Like, I was surprised it was only a fine. But, you know, Tom Wilson is definitely the most polarizing player in the league right now. Just the dialogue on Twitter yesterday about, you know, what the punishment should have or should not have been. I mean, the New York Post wrote a headline saying that Tom Wilson should be banned from the NHL for, quote unquote, nearly killing Artemi Panarin. You know, perhaps that's just New York Post headline 101, but, you know, I just think that Tom Wilson is better than this. He is a much better player than resorting to those sorts of things.
Yeah, I think Laviolette's Cobra Kai stuff has made Tom Wilson worse. that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. So, on the goalie talk, Adam, I did want to get your thought on this right now, because it's possible we could see Pekka Rinne this weekend or Saturday or Monday, potentially, depending on how things go. Where are you right now in his immediate future?
Well, I heard what David Poile said yesterday to Willie and Darren, and you know that all everything that David said, you know, makes sense. You know, I can understand why Pekka might be, you know, a bit, you know, bummed about the situation. This, you know, could be his final season, and you know, it was a natural move for him to become the backup. But you know, like no one could have expected UC Saros to play the way that he's been playing, especially when you consider how he was playing before he was injured in early March. You know, if I were the Predators and the Predators clinch a playoff spot tonight, I'm starting Pekka Rinne on Saturday. You know, give him perhaps one last Saturday night start in Nashville, just as he's done so many times throughout his excellent career. But for all intents and purposes, he's been a good teammate. I mean, this is what we've known about Pekka Rinne. I mean, he's, for as mild-mannered and as generous as he is with his time and just how wonderful of a person he can be, you know, he's also a fiery competitor. So I bet it's certainly eating him up inside that he hasn't been playing. But, you know, everything that I've heard is that he's been a exceptional teammate. He's been there for UC Saros. You know, he's imparted wisdom on UC in terms of how to play so many games in a row and how to play games in this type of high-pressure environment. So, you know, I do believe that Pekka Rinne deserves a little credit for what we've seen out of UC Saros. I mean, their relationship, we've talked about it for years, is so close. You know, as John Hines said the other day, you know, you couldn't ask for a better mentor for UC Saros than Pekka Rinne. So, you know, I have to imagine that Pekka is, of course, a bit disappointed that he hasn't played a larger role in this season, but, you know, we see it after every game UC wins. You know, the last person to greet him in the handshake line is Pekka, and he wraps him up in a big hug. I mean, they care about each other a lot. So, you know, Pekka Rinne, you know, kudos to being such a great teammate.
Adam Vinyan from The Athletic has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road, joins us every Wednesday at 9:30. Adam, great stuff, man. Appreciate you taking time to join us.
All right, Rex Road. I think you look good in that shirt. I wasn't sure how it would look on you, but it looks good.
Hey, if you can be next.
Get a chance, go watch the first segment of the show. It's very exciting.
It's very exciting.
And it's kind of a nod to your favorite sport. So there
that's
you go.
True. We can get that. That's kind of a tease for Joe Rexroad there for Adam. Adam, appreciate you, man.
All right, guys. Thanks.
When we come back, we'll react a little bit more to the statement released yesterday by the New York Rangers, potentially the strongest statement I've ever seen from a professional sports organization regarding the firing of George Parros. All that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Final segment of the day here on Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Right now discussing the Tom Wilson situation that's brewing in the NHL. Now, if you missed it, Tom Wilson gets involved in a scuffle after a play in the Washington versus New York game on Monday night. Basically punches Pavel Buchnevich, and then there's a scrum that ensues after that, and he takes down Artemi Panarin to the ice. It looked very rough. Matter of fact, like when I first saw it, to your point, like I thought he like slammed his head on the ice. Now he didn't, and he was just kind of like moving Panarin around like a rag doll. Obviously, you don't want to see Panarin in there going up against Tom Wilson. And you would hope that, like, Tom Wilson at some point realizes, hey, I'm throwing Artemi Panarin around like a rag doll. Probably should stop. Like, probably should stop doing that at some point. So I get it. I think Tom Wilson has pretty consistently been a player that crosses the line. Honestly, when it came out yesterday that he got a $5,000 fine and wasn't suspended, I really wasn't all that surprised. Like, of the things that Tom Wilson has done, and there's a lot to choose from, this to me really wasn't that bad. Like, it really wasn't. By comparison's sake. Now, it wasn't something that you necessarily condone or that you want to do, but, like, I've seen Tom Wilson do way worse than this.
Right, but I think the complaint is, at what point is an accumulation something more, right?
Sure.
I mean, yeah, great.
I think it's a fair conversation.
It's not as bad as his worst. Well, how bad is his worst then, and how many times has he done it? Yeah, you know, I mean, that's the thing. And that's how – I mean, you see it in other leagues. I mean, you see someone who has, you know, a perfect with Cincinnati, even like Draymond, you know, with the Warriors. Like, if you get a certain rep, and then the standard changes for you. And I think it's weird that it wouldn't change for him. I think that the accumulation of offenses – I agree, this is not his worst one. But at what point is it, like, enough, man?
And then that led to a statement being released by the New York Rangers yesterday that was potentially, I think, the strongest statement I've ever seen from a professional sports organization. Quote, the New York Rangers are extremely disappointed that Capitals forward Tom Wilson was not suspended for his horrifying act of violence last night at Madison Square Garden. Wilson is a repeat offender with a long history of these type of acts, and we find it shocking that the NHL and their Department of Player Safety failed to take the appropriate action and suspend him indefinitely. Wilson's dangerous and reckless actions cause an injury to Artemi Panarin that will prevent him from playing again this season. We view this as a dereliction of duty by NHL head of player safety George Parros and believe he is unfit to continue in his current role. So that last part, I mean, you're basically calling for the Department of Player Safety head to be fired at that point by an NHL team.
Yeah, that's not your typical, you know, like thoughts and prayers statement or, you know, everyone 4th of July. Yay. I mean, like, you know, like that's a freaking a hammer. I mean, those team statements have been really interesting lately. You know, you got like Mark Davis with his statement, you know, off the Derek Chauvin conviction. I mean, like there's some teams are going more out there and trying to do different things, but this is, I can't recall a statement. I've heard people say it, but I can't recall a release statement that said this guy should be fired in the league.
It's pretty incredible. I don't know that I've ever seen anything quite like that. Let's very quickly go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Nate, who wants to weigh in. Nate, we got about a minute. Thanks for calling in to Robbie and Rex Road.
I said yesterday on Darren Duncan Chase that Tom Wilson needs to be kicked out of the league. And I'm standing firm on that.
Well, that's not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
I know. But he's a great player, yes. If he was on my team, I would be concerned because of how much he might get suspended. But, I mean, the Department of Player Safety is run by a goon, so what do we even know? He really does need to be fired from being the head of the Department of Player Safety. They aren't doing their job.
Hey, thanks for the call, Nate. We appreciate it. I mean, look, I mean, George Parros, it is interesting. Like, it's hard to get any consistency with some of these rulings. And I think it's frustrating for fans and frustrating for players as well. I mean, Tom Wilson's not getting kicked out of league. And the bottom line is this. People can complain about Tom Wilson all they want, and I get it. Every single general manager in the league wants Tom Wilson on their team. Every single one of them.
I agree, but he should have had more. You can't do it this many times and not have more punishment, to me.
That does it for us today here on Robbie and Rex Road. Darren Donica Chase is coming up next. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.
You want to know how I'm doing?
Yes, I do.
Okay. I'm going to tell you how I'm doing.
Okay. Oh, yes.
Yeah, baby.
We're vibing.
Come on.
We're vibing.